So this morning's message is taking discipleship seriously, and we're going to whip through this as fast as we can to get some stuff out of it. Amen. Got some meat and potatoes I want to share with you this morning. Luke's Gospel, the 14th chapter. This is Jesus speaking, and he's talking to his disciples, giving them a parable. This is the parable of the Great Supper. In chapter 14, verse 16, Jesus replied with this illustration. A man prepared a great feast and sent out many invitations. When all was ready, he sent his servant around to notify the guests that it was time for them to come. But they all began making excuses. One said he had just bought a field and wanted to inspect it, so he asked to be excused. Another said he had just bought 5 pair of oxen and wanted to try them out. Another had just been married, and he said he couldn't come. The servant returned and told his master what they had said. His master was angry and said, "Go quickly into the streets and alleys of the city and invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind." And the servant had done this. After the servant had done this, he reported that there is still room for more. So his master said, "Go out into the country lanes and behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come, so that this house will be full. For none of those that I invited first will be given the smallest taste of what I had prepared for them." Great crowds were following Jesus. He turned around and said to them, "If you want to be my followers, you must love me more than your own father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. Yes, more than your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. And you cannot be my disciple if you do not carry your own cross and follow me. But don't begin until you count the cost. For who would begin construction of a building without first getting estimates and then checking to see if there is enough money to pay the bills? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of funds. And then how everyone would laugh at you. They would say, 'There's the person who started that building and ran out of money before it was finished.' Or what king would ever dream of going to war without first sitting down with his counselors and discussing whether his army of 10,000 is strong enough to defeat the 20,000 soldiers who are marching against him? If he is not able, then while the enemy is still far away, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace. So no one can become my disciple without giving up everything for me. Salt is good for seasoning, but if it loses its flavor, how do you make it salty again? Flavorless salt is good neither for soil nor for fertilizer. It is thrown away. Anyone who is willing to hear should listen and understand." I think it's pretty obvious that when Jesus was sharing this with his disciples, and again, a parable is a illustration that predominantly has a central theme or a central point. And when Jesus was sharing this with the folks and all the people that were listening to him, he was pointing something out. And that is this, that to follow him exacts a price. We often say salvation is free. In other words, we understand that we can't earn salvation. But we must not come to the conclusion that because it's free, it's cheap. The Bible tells us in Hebrews, it says, "How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation?" And in these scriptures that Jesus is sharing, the first part of this you will notice that all the people make excuses. And if you look at the excuses, I mean, think of the excuses that the first two made. They're just so flimsy. For instance, the man says, "I just bought a field and wanted to go see it." Who in their right mind would buy a field before you went and saw it? Right? The next one said, "I just bought a team of oxen and I want to go try them out." Who would buy a team of oxen before you tried them out? So in other words, he's being facetious, and he's simply pointing out that the excuses that these people are making are just, they're ridiculous excuses. They're flimsy excuses. And he's really using this as illustrating that the excuses people make for not serving God when we stand before him are really going to be very flimsy. We're not going to be able to use the excuse, "Well, you know, God, I was busy." Because really that's what we often hear people say, "Well, I'm so busy." You know what we're busy about oftentimes? We're busy about our business. Jesus, when he was a young boy, and when his parents took him to Jerusalem for Passover and they couldn't find him, and they searched for him, and they went back and found him, and they found him in the temple talking to the elders, and they said, "Why have you done this?" And he said, "Did you not know I must be about my Father's business?" See, our business is the business of the kingdom. And really the war we fight in our nation is, and really in this culture that we live in, and really the real issue we face is the culture. The war that we fight is predominantly a warfare against the culture we live in. Because this is a culture that, this is by far the Western culture that we're living in right now. Because of technology, because of the fact that we are a nation that never sleeps. We are really a nation, and we are living in a time, really if you think about this, we are living in a time frame right now that is unprecedented ever in the history of the world. Ever. I read a book recently by, the guy that wrote Margins. What's his name? What was his name? The guy that wrote the book Margins. I can't think of his name suddenly. Anyhow, can't remember his name. So, but anyhow, this gentleman wrote this book talking about change, how we deal with the culture around us. And he's a mathematician, and he actually did a graph, and I wish I had it here, but he did a graph of the change, and he said if you looked at history for the last 6,000 years, you would find that things didn't change much. I mean, I've had this discussion with Stephen at times, different times driving down the road or somebody, think about the different choices you have today. Throughout history, people didn't have the choices we have today. I mean, food. In this culture, if you were raised in the Dark Ages or the Iron Age or, the different stages of history, you didn't get up in the morning and say, what kind of cereal should I have for breakfast? What do you think we should have for dinner? You pretty much had the same thing. There wasn't a choice like, should I have this for dinner or that for dinner or what should we make for dinner? You were lucky you had dinner. And you didn't have all the spices available. The average person's diet, especially in the West, was very bland because you couldn't afford spices. Most of your meals were pretty much probably vegetables. Most people couldn't afford meat. You didn't have meat very often. In most of the world today, people don't eat meat very often because they can't afford it, because it costs a lot to raise meat. So just the changes. And one of the things that he points out in this book is the fact that it's not just the changes that have happened in the last, 100 years. It's the choices you have. For instance, just as an example, Bibles. You have so many different types of Bibles, translations of Bibles, specifically designed Bibles today. You go to the grocery store, you're going to buy a pack of gum, you don't have one kind, you have 10,000 kinds. You're going to buy a can of pop, you have a gazillion types. So there's so many choices of everything today. And studies have found that the average person today in this Western culture processes more information in 1 week than the average person living in the 1800s would have processed in their entire lifetime. And when we think and we add to this the internet, the information highway, what we're really, the biggest issue we face right now is we're overdosed with information. We have so much information that we cannot even process it. I was reading an article a while back about that neuroscientists are actually discovering that the data is not in because we haven't dealt with media this long. We haven't dealt with technology. For instance, think of it, in the last 10 years, the explosion of the cell phone. The cell phone is the new center of our life right now. And that's not going to go away, especially with youth today. It's going to grow. And everything now is cell phones. There's over 1 million applications or apps that you can download to put on your cell phone. There's applications that are compasses. There's applications that are GPS. There's applications that will translate for you. There's applications that will open your, just do everything. Imagine anything you could imagine this thing doing for you, it pretty much will do it. And the interesting thing about technology and change is it isn't that what these things put out, and I'm not slamming, and saying, everything is evil, because that's not realistic. But the reality is I'm not so sure we were ever designed by God to live a lifestyle like this. Oz Guinness, in his wonderful book, The Timeliness, Prophetic Untimeliness, Oz Guinness is a Oxford graduate writer along the line of C.S. Lewis, tremendous writer, has written over 30 books. And in one of his wonderful books called The Prophetic Untimeliness, he talks about change, and he talks about the issue of just the clock. One African said, Americans are people that wear little gods on their wrists. We are governed by time. Do you think about that issue? And I know I'm throwing out a little bit of stuff here in just introducing this. Think about time. This is the first era where people have been governed by time as they are today. Time is the almighty, all-powerful God that we live by. Americans flip out when they go to other countries because people don't give a rip about time in other countries. You know, Mexicans show up half hour late for everything. Americans would go berserk if people show up like they did in other countries. India, they say the wedding's at 2, probably going to be about 6 by the time it gets started. But you know what? They're not dying of heart attacks either. They're not stressed to the max. They don't have alter. You know what I mean? In other words, I'm not saying that all of that is bad, but technology and change, and this is what Oz Guinness was pointing out. He said, if you look at change in technology, he said, this is by far the most invasive culture in the history of the world ever. It really is. It really is. As parents, I mean, think about what you guys are saying about going to this camp. If we could take youth and just lock you in a camp for a year, they'd all be changed. But the problem is when you go on a missions trip or you go to something like this, while you're there, God begins to mess with your life and transform your life. But when you come out of there, as soon as you walk off the plane and step back into, you know, you look at planes today. If you go to an airport, you should do this sometime. Just go to an airport and sit and watch. Well, you can't do that anymore because you can't get to the gates anymore. But the days when you used to be able to do that, and if you're ever flying on a plane and you're in an airport, it's so cool because as soon as people step off that plane and walk out the gate, guess what happens? Out comes that cell phone. Mm-hmm. They're talking, hey, I'm over here. It's just a nonstop buzzing in people's lives. If you take people and you lock them in a room, especially youth today with text messaging, and not just youth but adults, and you say you can't have a cell phone, as soon as they get out of there, it's like lighting up a cigarette. I got to have a fix. It's the same principle. But this is what Oz Guinness says. This is the most invasive cultures. And one of the things we find about this culture is we find in areas where revivals have broken out, like China, Russia. But what, by the way, China right now is the greatest revival on the face of the planet right now. But you know what they find in all cultures that are like developing nations and revival breaks out? As soon as technology and Western civilization gets there, the revivals start dying. They begin to choke it out. When the Berlin Wall fell and Russia opened its doors, the gospel poured into Russia and people were like starving people for hearing the gospel. People would pack out buildings, and this is the way it is in China. But as soon as that stops and people have liberty, which that will happen in China, China will have no choice, but eventually they're going to have to loosen their, because the next generation that's come along, there's going to come a window of opportunity in China where the government is going to relinquish their suppression of religion, because they're going to have no choice, because the youth that are coming up are they're savvy because they've got technology. And when that happens, the gospel is exploding in China. But once the devil understands that if I stop suppressing the gospel and let people have liberty, it'll happen just like it did in the Roman Empire, and apathy will set in. It always sets in. What is my point? Well, if I go back to what I was talking about before, this chart that this gentleman did, if you look at the first 5,000 years of Western civilization and world history, you can literally mathematically chart this, and it goes on a flat line. The change. Changes just like this until you get to the year about 2000. And he said this is an accurate chart. The chart turns and goes straight up. That's how fast change is happening right now. How many of you have ever ridden on a roller coaster? Now, I don't like roller coasters. I've ridden on about 3. They do nothing for me. The first roller coaster I ever went on was in the Eagle at Six Flags down in Chicago, and I've never been on a roller coaster, and this is a huge wooden roller coaster, and it tops out at about 60 miles an hour going downhill, and I thought this is going to be really a fun experience. Well, I didn't know that wooden roller coasters are not much fun, and I figured this is just going to be smooth sailing. It about jarred your teeth out going down that thing. I was holding on to my glasses, thinking they're going to fly off and I'm going to run over them or something, but I'm just praying all the way down, please let this stop, please let this stop, please let, I can make it through this, But this is sometimes how the way life gets sometimes in our lives. Once you get on that roller coaster and it begins to move and you're on. And it's like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And you're not getting off until it stops at the end of the ride. That's the freaky thing about rides. As you know, even though you're on there and you're, by the grace of God, you're not going to die, it's like, it will end, it will end, it will end. But you're not getting off until it ends unless you're going to kill yourself. So this is the way society, our culture is sometimes. It's like we are caught up in this roller coaster called Western civilization, called the kingdom of darkness, actually, and we are being roller coasted all over the world at a breakneck speed, and we don't know how to get off. How do we get off this thing? How do we stop? How do we, there used to be a wonderful old song by Eddie Arnold who dates me. I remember listening to Eddie Arnold, who was way back when. It says, stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going round and round. And that sometimes, you ever feel that way in America? But the only one that can stop the world and make it stop is you. You and the power of God. You say, well, how do I function in a world like this? Well, there's Amish people. They function quite well. I'm not saying, okay, well, let's all wear gray suits and grow our beards and wear a hat. I'm not saying that. But the point is, we are wrapped up in a society, and we're not handling it very well, are we? And there's two camps. There's the one camp that says, okay, I'm gonna become anti-society. I'm gonna go live out in the woods. That's not real practical. We're to be the salt of the world. City on a hill that cannot be hidden. And we have to live in this culture. You can't just unplug from the culture if you're gonna impact the culture. It's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. You have to be able to impact the culture. So that means you have to be involved with the culture. And you can't be involved with the culture if you say, well, I'm not going to have a cell phone and I'm not going to go on the internet. Well, then you're just going to be left behind. Because guess what? You cannot really function in this society. You will not be able to function in this future. You practically can't function today unless you have either a cell phone or an internet. You can't make it without an internet in this culture today. As a matter of fact, in the future, almost all business will be done some way, and almost is today, with the internet. If you crash the internet, our economy would crash instantly. Because every bank, every system, every store depends on that internet. It's the World Wide Web. 666, mark of the beast, amen? And I'm not saying, well, okay, it's the devil. There's a lot of great things on the internet. I use the internet constantly. For research, it is the most amazing tool because you can find stuff like POW. Stuff that would have taken you weeks to find before. You can find it. You can research it. It's there. The problem with all of this is that there's just too much. And the fact is, we are living in a culture where we've been inundated with where we have a difficulty distinguishing what is valuable and what should be accessed and what is not worth the salt to be accessed. Amen. You say, what does this have to do with what Jesus was talking about? Well, but because Jesus said this. He said, if you're going to be my disciples, you're going to have to make some decisions. Right? You're going to have to make some choices. What kind of choices? Choices about how you live your life. Choices about where your priorities are at. Choices about where your allegiances are at. Didn't Jesus, it's pretty plain, Jesus said, you're going to have to choose whom you're going to be the loyalist to. He said, if you want to be my disciple, you're going to have to really love me more than anyone or anything or anybody. You're going to have to love me. And that means I come first in your life. Now, that's a challenging statement, isn't it? Because the last thing I'm here to do is just pile guilt on you and heap more, you know, Pastor, I'm struggling with life. I know where people are at today. I mean, I've been a pastor for over 20, almost 25 years, and I have watched this culture, and I watch people's lives. And believe me, I'm extremely merciful to people. I really am, because I know where people are at. I wonder sometimes how people keep it all together. Because, I mean, raising a family in this culture today where your kids are involved in everything. I mean, people are running their heads off. I mean, for instance, when I grew up playing sports, you had some break in sports. Today, sports are like, if you're going to play sports, it's a year-round. It's like you're a professional, for crying out loud. Get a grip. I mean, kids are playing summer basketball, summer wrestling, winter football. So, you know, it's just never stop. And you're expected, if you're going to be a championship, and the truth of it is, most of those kids are never going to be able to do the pros to begin with. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that goes on. It's just like everything's to the maximum now. Everything you do, it's maxed out. And that's where the culture is going. And there's a reason behind it. Because, see, the thing we don't comprehend, and there again, I'm not saying there's a boogeyman behind every bush, but we do have to realize that the culture we live in, no matter how much we love the things of this world, no matter how much we enjoy the pleasures that this world can offer us, there is a spirit behind it. And guess what? The devil's not stupid. The devil understands that the way you snare people is you give them what they like. You give them what they like. If we didn't like anything, it'd be pretty hard. What do they like? They don't like anything. They like God. That's all they like. What are we going to use on them? I don't know. Because all they're interested in is God. See, that's not the problem, is it? It's like Watchman Nee said in his book, Overcoming the World, he said, the difficulty is how do we touch the world and interact with the world and the world not get a hold of us and get on us? Remember the story of the tar baby? Remember that story? The tar baby, and I can't remember it very well, but it's the tiger and the tar baby. And somebody refresh my memory. I think the tiger or somebody hit the tar baby and his paw stuck to the tar baby. And pretty soon, you know, he just stuck to it. And that's kind of the way things are. Nobody intends to go out and become an alcoholic. Right? Pretty soon they're stuck. You know, I'm stuck here. Nobody intends to do things that destroy their life, but pretty soon I'm addicted to it. I can't live without it. Know what I mean? Nobody starts out to go, this is going to just destroy my relationship with God. No one ever think that. But what happens? We get involved with something, and it gets a hold of us, and pretty soon we have an affection for it. And once we get an affection for it, even things that can be very good can become very destructive because they turn our hearts away from God. Idolatry is anything that we love above and beyond God. Anything that fills our thought life more than God or more than our passion for God becomes an idol in our lives. I don't care how good it is. I mean, I've had times in my life where the Green Bay Packers have been my idol, even since I've been a Christian. And I'm like, get a grip. They're a football team. They're going to crash and burn. You know? And I like football. I like sports. I grew up watching sports. And there are people that worship sports. And I like the Packers, but there's times in my life where God has said, you better get away from this. Because, you know, I'm watching the game, and then it's not just watching the game. I'm going to go on the internet and check all the stats and blah, 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 blah. Pretty soon you're spending hours wasting your time doing something that's not fruitful eternally. And for you, it may not be sports. It might be fishing. It might be hunting. It might be shopping. It might be reading frivolous books. It might be sitting on your cell phone and texting everybody. What are you doing? I don't know what I'm doing. What are you doing, huh? How are you? Blah, 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 blah. Teenagers, you don't have that much to say. Really, you don't. Hey, what you doing? I don't know what you doing. What you doing? I don't know what I'm doing. And Facebook and that stuff. It's not that important. Well, I'm going to see what Sally's wearing to school today. Clothes, I hope. As small as they are. You get the point. It's stuff, and it's all these things. And when we're talking about taking discipleship seriously, really Jesus is really laying it on the line. He said, if you're going to be my disciple, you're going to have to make some decisions with your life. And this is really, if we were to nail it all down, if I were to boil it all down in a pot and come up with one thing, what's the one thing that is the biggest challenge in a human being's life when it comes to living for God wholeheartedly? And we could say T-I-M-E. Because that's the only thing you really have that you can give to God, is time. And how you spend your time, how I spend my time, determines how much we love. And anything you spend a lot of time with shows where your heart is. Right? And if you hear Americans say, and I realize that, you know, some of you are working 60 hours a week. And listen, we live in a society today that where companies are kind of geared like, well, let's just work you like a Hebrew slave. You want a paycheck? We're just going to work you till you die. And no, that's nothing new. It's interesting, isn't it? Isn't it interesting that we started out in a society where people pretty much worked for the company store? They'd work 12 to 14 hours a day at no wages. It kind of seems like it's going back there. Now, I realize there are cultures today that are really into work. And there's nothing wrong with working hard. And a lot of Americans we know are lazy. But the fact of the matter is, we are the culture itself and the way society is turning is it's destroying people. Now you say, well, how do we stop that? You know, I have to work. Yes, you do. You do. But guess what? It's only people that can change that. It's only people that can stand up and say, you're not going to do this. You know, hire somebody else. Hire another person. That's just a mind-blowing thing to me with companies. And I know why they do it, because they're cheap. Companies today, this is a big thing with companies. This is the new norm. We don't hire anybody full-time because we don't have to pay you any benefits. And we can fire your can at any time. And instead of hiring more people to do more work because you need more laborers, we don't want to do that, so we just work you till you drop dead in the saddle. Isn't that kind of the norm nowadays? It's nonsense. It's nonsense. But you know why that happens? Because we have allowed it to happen. Because people think they're slaves. Well, if I don't say that, they'll fire me. Maybe if people stood up to companies and said, listen, this is ridiculous, hire some more people. You want a good workforce? See, this is part of the problem between labor and people, is labor has to get a clue that people are not machines. And people need to be good employees. How do we get off on that? I don't know how we got off on that. But the point of the matter is that the culture itself, you look at everything in this culture, and the culture is super demanding. Everything, pour your time, pour your energies in. So the fact of the matter is, as we look at Americans and where we're at, because I'm speaking to an American group today, we have less and less and less and less and less discretionary time. Where you maybe used to work 40 hours a week, and you had this amount of time off, now people work 60 hours a week. Well, it's kind of like putting gas in your car. How many realize, I was just talking to Jim about this, you know, I have a gas credit card, and we buy all of our gas on the credit card because I just make one payment a month, and I get a discount, as little as it might be, but it's just as easy to make one payment for us as it is to make a payment every week, and so we just make one payment a month, and on average, as I was looking at my credit card, I got it last month, the last 2 months, it's over $500 for gas, because we put a lot of miles on a car. And I looked, gas went down a few cents, and it's a little over $400. So that little bit of leeway right there created a lot more spending money. Same thing's true about time. See, you don't realize when you're dishing a little bit out at a time how much you're going through. See, when I get my credit card at the beginning of every month, I go, wow, we spent a lot of money on gas this month. You know? But, you know, I'd be spending that money on gas whether I had a credit card or not. I'd just be spending it in smaller increments. But when you get that credit card at the first of the month and it's $500, you go, that's a heap of bunch of money to spend out. At least my paycheck could just go $500, yeah. But see, that's the way people don't realize. If you're giving a lot of time at something up front, like if you're just pouring a big chunk in it, you recognize it, don't you? But when you're just giving a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit here and a little bit there, you don't think it's much. like that 10 minutes you spend a day, 15 minutes, half hour, hour every day checking your email, chatting online, blah, 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 blah. You add that up, that's a lot of time. There's a lot of time we spend in worthless things. Do you think so? There is a lot of time and energy and passion and devotion we give to things and we give to events and we give to other people as well. That really is worthless. Have you ever done something that you look at after you got done with it and you go, why did I ever commit to that? What a waste of my time. I could have been doing something much more enjoyable or much more beneficial. You know, I'm of the adage as a pastor, everything we do, I always evaluate. I'm always looking, well, is this bearing any fruit? I don't want to do stuff just to do it. I don't want to do stuff that's not bearing fruit. I mean, I don't look at how many people attend, I look at how many people didn't attend. I don't look at how many people reach, and I'm looking at how many people aren't we reaching. Because you can go, you know, in the American churches, especially in rural communities, because we're not very big, you go, people, well, you know, we only had 3 people, but it was all worth it. Was it really? Well, if we even reach 1 person, we're happy. Really? What kind of bank investment would that be? Well, if I got a dollar back on my $100,000 investment, it'd all be worth it, would it? No. That's just a lame excuse to saying it was a flop. And people do the same thing. I see this as churches all the time. They'll get involved with something. Ministries get involved. Well, we did this year, and, you know, is it bearing any fruit? For instance, I'm involved with a group, and I hope they never hear this CD, but I'm going to say it anyhow. You know, they want to give bottles of water at the Mardi Gras with scriptures on them. I know that sounds like, well, somehow somebody's going to read that scripture and go, oh my gosh, hallelujah, I got saved. I found the living water. Chances are you're going to give a lot of water away and waste it on a bunch of people that really don't need it to begin with, hoping some of it's going to stick. Now, I have heard testimonies of people reading one scripture verse and getting saved. But my estimation, that is not a good way to spend your time or your money or your energies. Now, I may be wrong about that. My point is, what God is saying to us in this hour, what Jesus, I believe, is saying to us in this message I want to convey to you is that we have a lot of choices. And what we really need to do is we need to start evaluating our choices. We really need to take a good hard look at how we spend our time, our devotion, because the old saying is only one life will soon be passed, and only what's done for Christ will last. You know, I'm not telling you all to go out and become a preacher like me. That's not, if you were all preachers, how would we reach people where you're living? You're impacting people. And listen, I understand how things work. When you're in a particular business, certain occupations are much more demanding in time. You know, like for instance, Sheila takes tours to Washington, D.C. and all over the country. When she's on those tours, that's a huge responsibility. And, you know, you're from the time she gets up in the morning to she falls in bed at night, she's like, well, you got to be like that. You can't be like, well, you know, whenever we get there. Oh, we missed the train. Well, we'll walk. It doesn't work that way. So you understand there's a balance, what I'm saying. Well, Pastor Tim said get rid of the clock and just live like in the third world nation. Well, if you're going to live like in the third world nation, you're going to have to move to the third world nation because the world's going to run you over. You know? The old adage is if you want something done, give it to somebody that's busy. You know, busy people get things done. That's why they're busy. People that aren't busy, they're usually not doing anything a lot of times. So, you know, I've found that over the years that people that are really at it, they're getting stuff done. Now, the point is, how do we evaluate what's of eternal value? Well, it's very difficult because, you know, we don't always know what's of eternal value, do we? You don't always realize right up front that what I'm investing my time in here is really going to have some eternal consequences. But going back to what we're talking about and wrapping this up with looking at some priorities. Well, of course, what's our first and foremost priority in our life as a Christian? God and time with God. But yet what oftentimes is the very first thing that we get pushed aside? God. You know, people give God, if we're really honest with ourselves, most of the time we've got our leftovers. People get to, you know, an offering comes around. I've gotten this illustration before. Sometimes people are like, well, I don't like to go to church because all they ever talk about is money. That's because you love money. That's because money is your God. The love of money is the root of all evil. It's only, isn't it interesting that the only place you hear that is all they want is your money is church? I never hear that about professional football teams. I never hear people going into the casino, which, by the way, is full almost every time you look at it. I never hear people say, all that casino wants is my money. No, they're putting out those slot machines because they want to bless me with a jackpot. I never see people going up to the counter, you know, old people that can't hardly buy anything, you know. They're up there living on food stamps, practically. Give me the lottery ticket today, and they're up there scratching that lottery ticket. Can hardly breathe. They're living on oxygen, usually. And let me scratch. I might win the jackpot. I never hear them say, you know, all they want is your money. No, they just want to bless me. Isn't it interesting? The only places they want your money is church. The only people that are really interested in your money is me. Preachers. We're the only ones. Well, I don't go to that church because the preacher talks about money. Yeah, he does. Because think about it. You know, all during the week, you go to the gas station, you take your credit card, you whip out your billfold. How much is it? $75. It's $50. You're going to go get that video? It's this. It's this all week long. You're just dishing out. It's like, hey, you want some free money? Here it is. All week. People get to church and they go, oh my gosh, money. They're going to ask for money. They're going to ask for money for those starving kids down there. And I don't have any money. I would give, but I don't have it. Why? Because you gave it to everybody else. Well, I don't know how much God expects. God expects everything. Will you want me to give everything? If God will, yeah. God is a gentleman, right? My point is simply this. Put it all backwards. Oh, they're going to ask for another offering. It should be, thank God they're asking for more money. I get an opportunity. How do we? Let's look at this script. Let's look at this. This is why I stay.